Hello, this is Leaven Online, and I'm Richard Bradshaw with a special Platinum Jubilee podcast. You may recognise the music I'm talking over. It's Handel's anthem, Zadok the Priest, famous for its very long introduction, building up to a triumphant double forte climax. It was written in 1727 for the coronation of George II and has been used at every coronation ever since, including the Queen's, in 1953. King David had a number of children, with Solomon only his fourth son. At the time of his death, the two eldest had been killed, leaving the third, Adonijah, as the heir presumptive. However, David on his deathbed had expressed a preference for Solomon. Cue various bits of manoeuvring and skullduggery by all concerned, including David's widow, Zadok the priest, and Nathan the prophet, to make sure that Adonijah did not get the top job and was indeed bumped off before the coronation. That's the bit they don't tell you. Are we there yet? Not quite. Later on in this podcast, I'll be sharing with you some of the Queen's own favourite music. Yes, she has let her top 10 favourites be known, and other pieces evoking royalty and the years of her reign. Yep, here we go. And so on and so on, much more alleluia-ing and ameny. You don't want to hear the lot just now, I've got other things to get through. Anything you can do, I can do better. No, that's not me saying that. I'm quoting, of course, the words from a show song. They seem quite appropriate to a monarch, really, because anything we can do, she can obviously do better, or at least more royally. But it is indeed one of the songs that the Queen has let it be known are among her top 10 favourites, so let's have a listen.
And now, little lady, if you'll kindly step up to the parapet, I'll give you a lesson in marksmanship.
You couldn't give me a lesson in long-distance spitting. Anything you can do, I can do better. I can do anything better than you.
No, you can't.
Yes, I can.
No, you can't.
Yes, I can.
No, you can't.
Yes, I can. Yes, I can.
Anything you can be, I can be greater. Sooner or later, I'm greater than you.
No, you're not.
Yes, I am.
No, you're not.
Yes, I am.
No, you're not.
Yes, I am. Yes, I am. I can shoot a partridge with a single cartridge.
I can get a sparrow with a bow and arrow.
I can live on bread and cheese.
And only on that?
Yes.
So can a rat.
Any note you can reach, I can go higher.
I can sing anything higher than you.
No, you can't.
Yes, I can.
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 No, you can't.
Yes, I can. Anything you can buy, I can buy cheaper. I can buy anything cheaper than you.
50 cents.
40 cents.
30 cents.
20 cents.
No, you can't.
Yes, I can. Yes, I can.
Anything you can say, I can say softer.
I can say anything softer
you can't.
Yes, I can.
No, you can't.
Yes, I can.
No, you can't.
Yes, I can. Yes, I can.
I can drink my liquor faster than a flicker.
I can do it quicker and get even sicker.
I can open any safe
without being caught.
Sure.
That's what I thought, you crook.
Any note you can hold, I can hold longer.
I can hold any note longer than you.
No, you can't.
Yes, I can.
No, you can't.
Yes, I can.
No, you can't.
Yes, I can. Yes,
no,
I can.
In my coat.
In your vest.
In my shoes.
In your hat.
No, you can't.
Yes, I can. Yes, I can.
Anything you can say, I can say faster.
I can say anything faster than you.
I can jump a hurdle.
I can wear a girdle.
I can knit a sweater.
I can fill it better.
I can do most anything.
Can you bake a pie?
No.
Neither can I.
Anything you can sing sweeter.
I can sing anything sweeter than you.
No, you can.
Yes, I can.
No, you can.
Oh, yes, I can.
No, you can.
I can.
No, you can.
Yes, I can.
No, you can't.
Yes.
February 6, 1952, Princess Elizabeth, Duchess of Edinburgh, becomes monarch of the United Kingdom of Great Britain and Northern Ireland and the British Dominions, Canada, Australia, New Zealand, South Africa, Pakistan and Ceylon. Dominions, eh? There was still a British Empire in 1952, but it was being dismantled as colonies became independent and emerging into what would become the Commonwealth as we know it today. It had already stopped being the British Commonwealth. That ended in 1949. Back to 1952, you would go to the pictures rather than the cinema, and you'd expect to see two features, as well as not nearly so many trailers and adverts as now. Not long after the Queen's accession, a musical came out in America, and later in the year it was released in the UK, which wasn't a smash hit at the time, but whose stature has grown to, dare I use the word, iconic, largely because of its title track, which goes like this.
I'm singing in the rain, just singing in the rain. What a glorious feel, and I'm happy again. I'm laughing at clouds so dark up above. The sun's in my heart and I'm ready for love. Let the stormy clouds chase everyone from the place. Come on with the rain, I've a smile on my face. I'll walk down the lane with a happy refrain, just singing, singing in the rain. Dancing in the rain. I'm happy again. Singing and dancing in the rain.
This podcast is brought to you via Leavin' Online, a streaming service with a wide range of podcasts for you to download at your convenience from www.leavinonline.co.uk. I'm Richard Bradshaw, and you're not, so that's that settled. Back to Her Majesty, who has been reigning over us for 70 years, 3 months and counting. and what years they have been. I don't know how much you would fancy being royal. I'm very conscious of what a constitutional monarch can't do, but the job does have its perks, including the Queen cannot be prosecuted for anything at all. She doesn't have to pay taxes, though we understand that she pays some. She doesn't need to carry a passport, though all other royal family members need to. She is exempt from jury service, though again, other members of the royal family are not. She cannot be done for speeding, so she will never have to go on a speed awareness course. She owns all the unclaimed swans. That's been a royal prerogative since the 12th century. She can dismiss a prime minister. Oh, don't get me started. The Queen can pardon a criminal and has done fairly recently. The criminal's name was Steve Gallant, he being the guy that took on the terrorist on London Bridge, if you remember that incident. And the Queen, although she can drive, does not need a licence or a number plate. Well, baby, you can drive my car.
Ask the girl what she wanted to be. She said, baby, can't you see? I want to be famous, a star of the screen. But you can do something in between. Baby, you can drive my car. Yes, I'm gonna be a star. Baby, you can drive my car. And baby, I love you. I told that girl that my prospects were good. And she said, baby, it's understood. Working for peanuts is all very fine, but I can show you a better time. Baby, you can drive my car. Yes, I'm gonna be a star. Baby, you can drive my car. And maybe I love you. Beep, 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 yeah.
For baby boomers like me, that may have been the moment when we realised that the Beatles were not just another pop group over whom all the girls went silly, but a phenomenon who would go on to encapsulate so much of what made the 60s a unique decade in the Queen's reign.
Baby, you can drive my car.
The first track, On Rubber Soul, which that was, signalled a quantum leap in their creativity. We listened to it in bewilderment. You can't do harmonies like that. You can't write songs for string quartet. You can't use sitars. You can't mess around with playing tape loops backwards. But the Beatles did all that and so much more, and opened the floodgates for a vast range of other groups to write and record songs that made Singing in the Rain feel like it was another century. But back then, a standard evening out might still be a variety show more than a rock concert. And there was, of course, a royal variety performance in which the Beatles famously appeared. And back in the day when utter deference to royalty was mandatory, John Lennon dared to crack a joke, keeping his fingers crossed that Her Majesty would take it in good part. She did, but the fact he dared to crack it signalled that the times were definitely a-changing.
Thank you. For our last number, I'd like to ask your help. But the people in the cheaper seats, clap your hands. And the rest of you, if you just rattle your jewellery. Thank you. We'd like to sing a song called Twist and Shout.
Royal variety performances continue, tending to showcase only the safest, family-friendliest of artists. Some of them you feel getting towards, if not past, their sell-by. Max Bygrave was a favourite, ditto Cliff, Shirley Bassey, Harry Secombe. There have been occasional nods towards more mainstream culture. Take That have appeared 5 times, Westlife 3, Elton John 4, Kylie Minogue 6. There was an odd appearance of Lady Gaga. But there's been no Bowie, no Genesis, Spandau Ballet, no Queen for the Queen, ironically, no Pink Floyd, no punk, no grunge, no rap, and predictably, no Rolling Stones. A royal presence has been mandatory, not necessarily the Queen's. Sometimes the Queen Mum would turn up, or Charles, either on his own or with Camilla, or just the once in 1984 with Diana. The Queen last attended in 2012, where the lineup included One Direction and Girls Aloud. but also Jimmy Tarbuck, Ronnie Corbett and Bruce Forsyth, so null or not many points for Cool there. But I imagine the standout moment was when one of the great sing-along songs of the last century was performed by its writer, whose lower register was by then showing its and his age.
Where it began, I can't begin to know it, but then I know it's growing strong. Wasn't the spring, and spring became the summer. Who'd have believed you'd come along? Hands, touching hands, reaching out, touching me,
touching you.
Good times never seem so good. I'm feeling fly. Cheer beneath they never would. But now I love the nights, and it don't seem so lonely. We fill it up with only two, and when I hurt, burden runs off my shoulders. How can I hurt when I'm here with you? Warm, touching warm. Reaching out, touching me,
touching you, sweet Caroline.
Good times never seem so good.
The Beatles were never invited back as a band or as individuals after they split up. I'm not really sure the Queen was ever into twisting, or indeed shouting. She is valued as a calming presence for whom never losing your composure is an absolute requisite. You can't really ever imagine her going off on one, can you? But while she may not have twisted much, we do know that she used to enjoy dancing, and was supposedly pretty nifty on her pins. Here then is a dance number from her list of personal favourites from 1935. Her Majesty obviously loves the musicals. This is from Top Hat.
Heaven, I'm in heaven, and my heart beats so that I can hardly speak, and I seem to find the happiness I seek. When we're out together dancing cheek to cheek. Heaven, I'm in heaven, and the cares that hung around me through the week seem to vanish like a gambler's lucky streak. When we're out together dancing cheek to cheek. Oh, I love to climb a mountain and to reach the highest peak, but it doesn't thrill me half as much as dancing cheek to cheek. Oh, I love to go out fishing in a river or a creek, but I don't enjoy it half as much as dancing cheek to cheek. Dance with me, I want my arm about you, the charm about you will carry me through to heaven, I'm in heaven, and my heart beats so that I can hardly speak, and I seem to find the happiness I seek when we're out together dancing cheek to cheek.
See how you can be royal and not, at least to some extent, old-fashioned. Royalty has to do with maintaining a line of tradition, with preserving customs even when they've become quaint. You don't expect to see your monarch suddenly getting tattoos or piercings. But in post-war Britain, the monarchy knew it had to make some concessions to the changing times or it would lose its popularity, come to seem aloof. The Queen started with a huge advantage, which will be denied to her successor, unfortunately, of being young and attractive. She's kept her popularity by maintaining a reasonable level of accessibility to the public. She first started doing walkabouts in 1970, but before that, have a listen to this.
25 years ago, my grandfather broadcast the first of these Christmas messages. Today is another landmark, because television has made it possible for many of you to see me in your homes on Christmas Day. My own family often gather round to watch television, as they are at this moment, and that is how I imagine you now. I very much hope that this new medium will make my Christmas message more personal and direct. It's inevitable that I should seem a rather remote figure to many of you, a successor to the kings and queens of history, someone whose face may be familiar in newspapers and films, but who never really touches your personal lives. But now, at least for a few minutes, I welcome you to the peace of my own home. That it's possible for some of you to see me today is just another example of the speed at which things are changing all around us. Because of these changes, I'm not surprised that many people feel lost and unable to decide what to hold on to and what to discard, how to take advantage of the new life without losing the best of the old. But it's not the new inventions which are the difficulty. The trouble is caused by unthinking people who carelessly throw away ageless ideals as if they were old and outworn machinery. They would have religion thrown aside, morality in personal and public life made meaningless, honesty counted as foolishness, and self-interest set up in place of self-restraint. At this critical moment in our history, we will certainly lose the trust and respect of the world if we just abandon those fundamental principles which guided the men and women who built the greatness of this country and Commonwealth. It has always been easy to hate and destroy. To build and to cherish is much more difficult. That's why we can take a pride in the new Commonwealth we are building. In the old days, The monarch led his soldiers on the battlefield, and his leadership at all times was close and personal. Today, things are very different. I cannot lead you into battle. I do not give you laws or administer justice. But I can do something else. I can give you my heart and my devotion to these old islands and to all the peoples of our Brotherhood of Nations.
I'm Richard Bradshaw, presenting for Leaven Online, your local streaming service run by local people. And if you want to join our team or contribute any ideas about podcasts we might make in the future, just go on our website at www.leavenonline.co.uk. Anyway, that was an extract from the Queen's first televised Christmas address in 1957. And what strikes me about it now is the level of concern that comes through about keeping the monarchy relevant. She was not taking support for granted. She acknowledged that she might seem remote, although she doesn't want to be. And there is also that touching and, again, old-fashioned reaffirmation of decent British values. Let's all be nice to each other. Not only will we get along better, but we will set an example to the world. She's still thinking in terms of Britain as a leader among nations, as back in 1957, of course, we were, though our standing had taken something of a knock in the previous year's Suez crisis. But she does articulate the dilemma of constitutional monarchy. I can't lead you into battles, I can't enact laws, but I can give you my heart. That was Milanolo, the regimental march of the Coldstream Guards, and another of the Queen's top ten. Of course, her role involves a great deal of contact with the military. In 1945, as Princess Elizabeth, she joined the Auxiliary Territorial Service, becoming the first female member of the royal family to be a full-time active member of the armed services. As Queen, she is head of the armed forces. She and other family members hold various appointments and honorary ranks. These include special relationships with certain ships. The Queen is Lord High Admiral in the Royal Navy. The Prince of Wales holds the rank of Admiral in the Royal Navy and is Commodore-in-Chief for Plymouth. Prince William holds the rank of sub-lieutenant and is Commodore-in-Chief for Scotland and submarines. Prince Charles also holds the rank of Air Chief Marshal in the Royal Air Force. In 2009, a new award was created called the Elizabeth Cross to provide national recognition for the families of armed forces personnel who have died on operations or as a result of an act of terrorism. Now, I do get that a lot of this military involvement is about helping to give dignity and prestige to what is at bottom a pretty brutal profession, which in a more civilised world we wouldn't actually need. But as recent events are proving, we dare not dispense with it, in hopes that we're about to attain enlightenment, like it's the age of Aquarius or something. But I do have a slightly frivolous question, which is about Trooping the Colour, a ceremony that takes place on Her Majesty's official birthday. What would happen if the colours weren't trooped? Would it make any difference? Clearly not, because for the last 2 years there has been a drastically scaled down and socially distanced version, and we're none the worse, which then makes me want to ask what actual purpose is served by the full works. Could the answer actually be it's good for tourism, which is often used as continuing justification for a lot of the pomp and circumstance that surrounds the monarchy. Only one work in the entire history of the Proms has had a double encore at its first performance, and you've just been listening to the first part of it. And that was actually before the trio section acquired the words we all know. Elgar actually missed the concert, believe it or not, but he knew he'd written a hit, and tune-wise, Land of Hope and Glory knocks spots off our official national anthem. The words unfortunately hark back to the time when the power of empire, for good or ill, was at its height. No one knew what horrors were in store for Europe. God who made thee mighty, make thee mightier yet. Can we sing those with integrity now? Anyway, the Queen, as we've heard, was old enough to serve in World War II, and we'll remember the hardships the nation went through. Perhaps the monarchy served as a unifying force, or the thought of it, as men and women went out to fight for king and country, not country alone. But there was another inspirational figure around too, and she figures on the Queen's top 10.
There'll be the white cliffs of Dover tomorrow, just you wait and see. There'll be love and laughter and peace ever after. Tomorrow, when the world is free, the shepherd will tend his sheep, the valley will bloom again, and Jimmy will go to sleep in his own little room again. There'll be bluebirds over the white cliffs of Dover tomorrow, just you wait and see. The shepherd will tend his sheep, the valley will bloom again, and Jimmy will go to sleep in his own little room again. There'll be bluebirds over the white cliffs of Dover tomorrow, just you wait and see.
You know, that woman could sing, and the quality of her voice remained with her for a long time after the war as well. I'm Richard Bradshaw for Leaving Online, offering you a mix of music and general chat for this Platinum Jubilee. Go to www.leavingonline.co.uk to find other great podcasts from me and the rest of the team. Her Majesty is the patron of hundreds of societies, to not all of which you can possibly give the same degree of attention. But her interests show through the mix: the performing arts, charitable works, church groups, Council for Christians and Jews was one that I noticed, the armed services, and animals, pigeons, shire horses, yellow labradors, though not corgis, and even insects make the list. She is a patron of the Entomological Society. She's had to turn down many requests, including one she really wanted to accept. It was told by her staff it was too trivial for her, the George Formby Society. "But I know all his songs," she protested. "Not even the slightly off-colour ones, Your Majesty?" George is in her top 10, but with a song that for once carries not the least hint of innuendo.
I'm leaning on a lamp, I know I look just like a tramp. Oh, you may think I'm hanging round to steal a cab, but no, I'm not a crook. And if you think that's what I look, I'll tell you why I'm here and what my motives are. I'm leaning on the lamppost at the corner of the street in case a certain little lady comes by. Oh me, oh my, I hope the little lady comes by. I don't know if she'll get away. She doesn't always get away, but anyhow I know that she'll try. Oh me, oh my, I hope the little lady comes by. There's no other girl I could wait for, but this one I'd break any date for. I won't have to ask what she's late for. She wouldn't leave me flat, she's not a girl like that. Oh, she's absolutely beautiful and marvellous and wonderful, and anyone can understand why. I'm leaning on a lamppost at the corner of the street in case a certain little lady passes by. I'm leaning on a lamppost at the corner of the street in case a certain little lady comes by. Oh, me, oh, my, I hope the little lady comes by. I don't know if she'll get away, she doesn't always get away, but anyhow I know that she'll try. Oh, me, oh, my, I hope the little lady comes. But I did da da dee bum bum, there's no bum.
The Queen is worth a bob or two, but there is stuff that she owns as an individual and a great deal else that belongs to the Crown, the monarch, regardless of who is holding the office. So, Buckingham Palace and Windsor Castle belong to the Crown. Sandringham and Balmoral are properties she has inherited. They would still be hers even if Britain became a republic. The same goes for the land and the huge collection of art that we might loosely call hers. Some of it belongs to her, some of it belongs to the monarch who happens to be her. There hasn't been any serious debate about whether Britain needs the kind of monarchy it's got, whether the Crown should retain all the possessions it has, and that may be partly because Her Majesty as a person has come to command such huge respect. Also partly because when the sums are done, the cost of maintaining the monarchy works out at something negligible like a few pounds per person annually. What are the sources of that respect? Positively, the sense that she has, until quite recently, worked very hard at the role, meeting people, reading papers, handing out awards, dealing with correspondence, making her official visits across the UK and over the world, hosting banquets and functions, turning up when she's supposed to turn up. But there's an important negative as well. The Queen has scrupulously ensured that we don't know what she thinks about anything of consequence. When rumours started flying that she was pro-Brexit, on the basis of an alleged remark which, even if it's correct, could be taken more than one way, the palace had its work cut out to deny that she'd broken protocol. Of course she can't be partisan. She has to read that so-called Queen's speech, even if it's full of proposals that she vehemently disagrees with. She must have her weekly audits with the Prime Minister, whether or not she can abide the man or woman. Thirdly, one does get the sense that here is a woman who knows what her duty is and gets on with it. There's not much in it for her, but it's what expected of her, to reign as a constitutional monarch. What does she really think about food banks, about same-sex marriage? What does she really want for herself? Apart from to be with horses, we don't really know. She seems above all to want to be what the nation wants her to be, and it's hard not to admire that. as we've heard already, the one opportunity the Queen has every year to speak to, and in some senses for, the nation is her Christmas broadcast. Clearing the dinner table in time for the Queen is a ritual in many homes. All the addresses are preserved for posterity on YouTube and elsewhere, but I feel the need to play you this from 1991. Reflect on what she says, think about what's happening in the world right now, and I defy you not to wince at the contrast between the optimism of Her Majesty's words, which I think we all felt back then, and the course of history since. Coming through strongly at the end of that clip, the Queen's own personal Christian faith, which is rather more than formal, and it sits well with her role as head of the Church of England. Two of the items on her top ten are actually hymns, "The Lord's My Shepherd" and "Praise My Soul, the King of Heaven." One wonders how comfortable King Charles III will be with that role, or how soon we may be finding out. I feel sure that our monarch's sense of a divine vocation to reign, hers by right or accident of birth, has fed into her decision never to abdicate or even retire, even though many of her duties are increasingly being assumed by her son and heir. Charles and the generation behind him have made various attempts to present the monarchy as keeping up with the times. There was, of course, the royal "it's a knockout."
I mean, it was just such a doomed idea, wasn't it, from the beginning? Let's take the young royals and do something really wacky.
His Royal Highness, the tantalisingly eligible Prince Edward, coaxing courage.
The monarchy in the 80s was realising it had a bit of an image problem. I mean, they're still working on it now. And they thought a good idea would be to get a bunch of minor royals together and to do "It's a Knockout."
It was the royal family, but not all of them. You could feel that disapproval coming through the whole thing. I know what royals weren't there, but the Queen certainly wasn't there. Prince Charles wasn't there.
The Royal "It's a Knockout" featured four royals, Prince Andrew, Fergie, Prince Edward and Princess Anne. Princess Diana wanted to do it, and Edward wanted Diana to do it, but Prince Charles banned Diana from doing it. On the day, it went incredibly well, and it was a very hot day, but Prince Edward, for me, just made one mistake, and he didn't allow the press to mingle with any of the stars. They were all kept in a tent. At the end of the day, he went into the press tent, and he sat down and he went, "Well, what do you think?"
He thought that they should be so grateful that His Royal Highness was turning up to entertain the masses.
"And I know the captains have enjoyed themselves. I only hope that you've enjoyed yourselves. Have you? Well, thanks for sounding so bloody enthusiastic. What have you been doing in here all day? Have you been watching it?
Yes.
Yeah. What did you think of it?"
They were hot, they were hungry, they hadn't seen anything in the flesh, so they didn't give him any reaction, they just dissed him and he lost his temper. And that is the moment that is remembered of the whole event.
He wanted the press to big him up and say how fabulous it had been, and it hadn't been fabulous. It had been embarrassing, it had been a monstrous carbuncle on the entire history of the royal family.
I can't imagine the royal family ever agreeing to doing anything ever like that.
But much more successfully, the Party in the Park, a golden jubilee event featuring a number of acts that would never make the list for the Royal Variety Performance.
She's into superstitions, black cats and voodoo dolls. I feel a premonition, that girl's gonna make me fall. She's into new sensations, new kicks in the candlelight. She's got new addictions for every day and night. She'll make you take your clothes off and go dancing in the rain. She'll make you live a crazy life, or she'll take away your pain like a bullet to your brain. Upside, inside out, she's living la vida loca. She'll push and pull you down. Living la vida loca. Her lips are devil red and her skin's the color of mocha. She will wear you out. Living la vida loca. Living la vida loca. She's living la vida loca.
Welcome to New York City. In a funky cheap hotel, she took my heart and she took my money. She must have slipped me a sleeping pill. She never drinks the water, makes you order French champagne. Once you let her taste of her, you'll never be the same. You should make you go insane.
How modern does the monarchy need to be if it is to survive? God forbid it should ever be trendy, but it needs to adapt to changing times, as the royal family itself seems well aware. And now we prepare to mark our Queen's 70 years on the throne. hoping for better weather at the Jubilee weekend than there was 10 years ago, when, if you remember, the central event was watery in more ways than one. 1,000-boat flotilla on the Thames, and it scythed it down. This year there'll be parties, there'll be much consumption of lemon sponge and amaretto trifle, for which there is a cheat recipe that takes many shortcuts around the official one, and another celebrity show with Diana Ross, of all the stars of yesterday, topping the bill. Memories of royal ups and down, of annuses horribilises, excuse my Latin, weddings, but also divorces, and funerals, laments about our parasitical press and sycophantic correspondence. They say we get the journalism we deserve, but I think we're better than much of it, especially when it comes to coverage of royal matters. I hope we will all heed Prince Charles's invitation to plant a tree, making it a tree-bilee. There's so much one could say, but my time is up, and I will leave you with another of the Queen's favourites, the song Gary Barlow wrote for the Diamond Jubilee, which I do think is a cracker. I hope you have enjoyed this podcast for Leaving Online. I am Richard Bradshaw, and I do hope you have a great Jubilee weekend.